Hello, good day to you all. You are listening to CJSF 90.1 on a special day where I am done my finals. And it's going to be even more special in a couple of minutes as my interviewing guest comes in. Her name is Natalie. She makes documentaries, and honestly, I don't even know too much about what they're about. We're going to find it all together. She makes them out of Montreal, where she learned a lot about this guy who is a very cool painter. And yeah, she's on her way, so take a listen to this, and then you'll hear her soon. Oh, and I forgot to tell you, of course, we are broadcasting from the unceded territories of the Musqueam, Quaquitlam, Squamish, and Tsleil-Waututh Nations, and I'm Katie, your host. Don't forget about that. Okay, back to music. Natalie's in the studio.
Hello.
Gosh, how's it going? You just came back from McGill.
Yes, very recently.
Was it awesome?
Yes, as always. It was beautiful.
Yeah, so today we're going to be talking about your documentaries that you've been working on. And first I wanted to start with the one that you were telling me about that you're doing in Montreal with the painter guy. So what was that one about?
So the first documentary I filmed was about a man named Harry. And he is, so I live in a neighborhood called the Plateau in Montreal, which is close to McGill. And in the Plateau, there's all these depths. And in Quebec, a dep is like kind of like a corner store. And so he is the dep owner near where I lived. And he's also a painter, so he paints in his store because he has nowhere else to paint. So I met him just buying stuff from his place, and we talked about art and his paintings. And I told him I was interested in film, and he was like, oh, well, make a film about me. And so I actually took him up on it. I did that.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah, but he's kind of like a neighborhood legend. Like, his store has been there since the 80s. Everyone kind of knows him. He's super sociable. Everyone kind of hangs out in his store, and just, yes, the store kind of started there.
Wow. Wait, what's the store? Like, what does he sell there? Like, what's his deal?
Very normal, like, corner store type of thing. Like, lots of beer, mm-hmm. mac and cheese,
all
snacks, Oreos, like, all that stuff. Yeah.
Wow. What was the painting, like, that he was working on when you saw him? Like, what did it look like, if you remember?
I don't know. When I first met him, I don't really remember, but he mostly does very, like, geometric paintings. Lots of, like, line work in different ways, and he kind of does it in a way for you to pull focus when you're looking at it. Mm. But a lot of them are quite similar. He just kind of changes up the directions the lines are going, or the shapes he's doing, and the colors. Yeah.
Well, so were you able to, like, have him explain his process, or was it just too, like, magical for him to put words to?
He definitely explained it, but for him, it's less about explaining and more about storytelling. Like, he always has an anecdote that goes with things he does in his life, you know? Like, if I ask him why he does these shapes, he'll kind of go on a tangent about some time in his life and what led him to this point, you know? And it very much is influenced by his Qigong practice, which is kind of like a mindful movement practice, kind of similar to Tai Chi, which most people know. And it's his way of kind of pulling focus in his life, and his method of meditation and moving his body. So his paintings are really influenced by that. And so the lines, like, often maybe he'll have a big circle and it'll just be lots of different circles to a center. And it's kind of a way for people to pull their focus to the center. And he kind of hopes that people will do some sort of Qigong type of practice. And he really wants to cultivate Qi, is how he explains it. Yeah.
Interesting. Because did you say that once, like, you went with him to do Qigong?
Actually, the first thing I ever filmed was a Qigong class that he was hosting. So he is a Qigong master, so he teaches a class. And when I first pitched the idea to him, he was like, oh, you know, come to my class. Let's try it out. And his store was closed for a couple months at the time for some sort of lease issue. So I couldn't film in the store, so I was like, okay. And it was in his friend's apartment, and it was like 10 people in the room, and I just set a camera on the tripod and just filmed him for 40 minutes straight doing Qigong. And it's very interesting because in the room it's completely silent, and when most people first see that shot, they think it's just him doing it, and they don't realize there's 10 people behind the camera doing it, because it's so silent, people are so focused, and, like, yeah. But that was interesting, and I was planning on just holding the camera, but he made me do it with him, so he's like, no, you have to. So I was there doing it, and it was quite beautiful, and I kept on going after that.
Oh, that's amazing. Mm-hmm. Are you feeling it? Are you feeling your chi?
In a way. Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. What was the group like? Like the crowd of people that were there doing Qigong? Like,
mostly, like, his friends, people who hang out at the store, lots of characters I see come around. Mostly, like, over 60.
Yeah, I was imagining that.
Because Qigong is something people have explained it to me as it has quite a heavy energy. So it is something that maybe is better to do more, like, later in life. Mm-hmm. Because people have also said to me that doing practices with more, like, a lighter energy is better to start out with, especially when you're young. Mm. So I think that's kind of why the draw to that is with maybe older people. And also the movements are a lot slower, so it's kind of easier on the body in a way.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. That's so neat. So what was, like, the focus of the documentary, if you were, like, seeing it as a story? Like,
the focus, it really changed from my initial idea until after, because I think Harry, having a creative mind, had his own twist on things, and I really couldn't avoid it, and I kind of love that. But At first, I just wanted to make it about his art and his process. And then it really became about Qigong because that affects every part of his life and he can't avoid it. And then after filming a lot, I filmed for over 2 months. I just went every day that I possibly could film for hours. It was probably so annoying, but I did. And after that, I kind of realized the film is more about him building a community.
Yeah.
And his store being a big pillar of the community. And the neighborhood is changing a lot over the years, but his store is something that's like almost stuck in time and a constant, and something I think is very comforting to people there.
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, like you just see people kind of passing by in the background a lot, and you realize like kind of his role and his role in life. Wow. Is to be that person. Yeah.
That's so incredible. that's so amazing. So what was like his reaction when you were like, okay, let's do this documentary then?
We sat in a cafe and I kind of talked to him about it and pitched it. And he was like, yeah, like whatever you want, I'll do it. And he's so easygoing, laid back. And just, he's really open to anything. So I kind of ran with it. I came with a camera and started filming anything. And he didn't even ask any questions. He didn't care about what direction I was going. He was just living his life and I was filming everything.
Wow.
That's how it went. Yeah.
He trusted you to capture it. And, like, I feel like you did. I'm, like, feeling, like I can imagine what he was like when you're just talking about him.
Wow, it's amazing.
Yeah. Wait, was this the first documentary that you made? Or?
Yes. Whoa. It is the first one I've made.
What was, like, did anything unexpected come up when you were, like, making it, like, on the technical side?
Definitely. I had no experience. I very much was, like, I think doing it is the best way to learn.
Yeah.
But I had taken a few workshops on how to use a camera and edit and stuff, but even while I was there, a lot of his friends actually in the store would help me. Like, one of his friends is, he works as a videographer, so he saw my camera had the craziest settings and he fixed it for me, and then I didn't touch it after that. I just kept it like that. Editing was really a challenge. It took me a long time and many issues came up. I didn't realize like how much storage I needed and just technical things like that. But overall, the footage and the sound quality turned out pretty good, which is like the best thing. So I could just work with it and manipulate it how I wanted.
Yeah. Wait, so where are you at in making that right now?
I finished it. Yes, so it's on YouTube.
It's on YouTube? What's it called?
It's called Harry.
Are people going to find it if they look up Harry? What do they look up to find it?
Harry, Harri.
Oh.
He spells it with an I. And it's on my YouTube account, Natalie Vita, probably. That's my name. and that's maybe how people can find it. I haven't advertised it much. I haven't really thought about it.
Oh my gosh, that's okay. Word of mouth.
Exactly.
Yeah. Okay, well, I think we're going to take a break right now. And today, guys, we're starting off with Avril Lavigne. Lately, I've been reminded of her album Let Go because I was looking at this old picture of my sister and she looked exactly like this era of Avril Lavigne. And I've just been listening to this song Mobile over and over again. I think you kind of get into a mobile mood in this time of year where it's like finals and winter and the year is changing. And guys, I'm so excited about life right now. And it feels mobile. I feel like a mobile, just like Avril Lavigne. So here you go. Here's Mobile. And also, I don't even know if I've said it's CJSF 90.1 in the last 10 minutes. So don't forget that. Well.
Again, this sucks. Gotta pack up and leave again. Say goodbye to all my friends. Can't say when I'll be.
volunteers at CJSF wish you a safe and Merry Christmas and a Happy New Year.
Aw, that was very nice.
That was short, yeah.
We just really wanted to know what the Christmas PSA was there, and it was exactly as we thought it would be. So
beautiful.
That's quite nice. Yeah, so this is CJSF 90.1 with Katie as your host on the open mic, talking to Nat about her documentaries. We were just talking about when she filmed in Montreal called Harry, that you can find on her YouTube channel. Wait, what is it again?
It's called Harry, H-A-R-R-I. On my YouTube channel, it's probably under my name, Natalie Vida. I'm not
probably.
So sure.
So go on the hunt for that, because if you didn't hear our conversation, it's about this painter who does Qigong in Montreal and just creates community there. And I think it'll be very inspiring to watch. And yeah, I'm excited. I'm going to watch it when I get home today. I didn't even know it was out yet. Wait, how long is it?
24 minutes.
That's like the perfect length for a documentary.
Yeah,
I
hope so. I
hope
you like it.
Okay, but now we're just going to go into some archaeology talk, because that's what she studies at McGill. So just first, what's it been like studying that?
It's been amazing. It's been kind of unexpected, you know. I study anthropology and sociology at McGill, but they kind of go hand in hand in some ways. But with respect to anthropology, you know, going in, I didn't know what to think about it. I thought it was just about, like, old architecture and excavations and stuff, but there's a lot more to it. It's more about, you know, the study of humans in general. And the first class I took at McGill was ethnography through film, taught by a professor named Diana Ellen, who, when I met her, she is a anthropology professor who also makes documentaries. That's her main job, and she travels the world doing this. And when I met her, I thought, oh, this is the life I want. This is exactly what I want to do. She is such an inspiration. She's so well-spoken. I found her so inspiring. And so from there, basically, the way I see my whole career at McGill is finding a way to get the life that she has, because I just found her so inspiring. And so I met her, and she pointed me towards the Critical Media Club, which is a club at McGill that I now run with the other members, and we host screenings of documentaries and talk about it. And this is like, that was a trajectory of how my interests developed. Yeah.
Whoa, wait, are you going to screen your documentary there?
I already have.
Oh, good.
But I think I will again. Yeah.
You should. Mm-hmm. What did people say about it?
This is in September. I wonder if I can remember.
Oh, right.
they took it quite well. You know, I was nervous because it's a room full of other filmmakers, and it was my first one. I knew it was very flawed. But I think what I found really refreshing was they really understood how multidimensional Harry was, and they could really see the little details in the film that show it, because a lot of it isn't so blatant. You can kind of see it come about more in the background, but they really picked up on it, which I really appreciated, and I liked that really came across in the film about how complicated his life is and what he makes of it.
Wow, that's so exciting. And then, is there anything else in the Critical Media Club that, like, inspires you when you're, like, watching documentaries or just, like, seeing how people receive them?
Yeah, I think, I mean, our big thing is we really want to foster a community of practice. So no matter what, everyone there is so not judgmental and always has really constructive feedback to give, and it really fosters a place to just make stuff no matter what, even if you're nervous, even if you're not qualified, whatever, which I think is what gave me the power to do this, because I only filmed the documentary. It was an independent project, but I use equipment from the club, and I got advice from people just from their own experiences, and it's all other students too, so I like how it's a community like that.
Yeah, that's so cool. And then, like, when you're studying archaeology, I know it's always interesting to think about the ethics behind it, and I was just wondering, like, what thoughts you had on that.
Yeah, it's very complicated. And you know, there are very many different strains of anthropology and archaeology in terms of ethics. Like, if you're doing excavations, that's a whole different thing. But and for documentaries, for me, when I thought about the ethics of how I want to make films and tell people's stories, I really was inspired by the work of Stephanie Spray. She had a film called Monsoon Reflections that I watched in that class taught by Diana Allen. Monsoon Reflections was very interesting because it follows a family of women in Nepal. And Stephanie Spray, the filmmaker, lived with them for a while and really got to know them. And in that film, you can really see their relationship come through. Because the women are so comfortable with her. Even, you know, you can even tell behind the camera, even if Stephanie isn't in the film, isn't seen, you can see that relationship come through kind of a reflexive way. And I found it so inspiring. And I thought, okay, like, you know, documenting people on film is so invasive.
Yeah.
Even taking photos of people is very invasive. And, like, how do you do that in a respectful way? And I thought that was such a good example of it. So with Harry, you know, I, even before I started to film, I had met with him many times. I got to know him. And I felt like he was such a big part of how the story developed because it's about him. So I couldn't see how he couldn't be involved in that. It wasn't just an observational thing. He was so involved, and I really listened to his thoughts and what he thinks about his own life and how to portray that in a respectful way and not exploit it in a way. Mm-hmm. So, and I hope that that relationship really comes through because I spent so much time with him. And people who watch my film, I feel like they do see that he's very comfortable with me. And I think that's something I really strive for in any future projects too.
Yeah, totally, because, like, you can feel that, like, in photography when the, like, model's, like, scared of the photographer compared to, like, when they have a relationship together.
Exactly.
But yeah, that's so amazing that you, like, cultivated that with him. Was there anything that you did, like, consciously, like, oh, I'm going to choose to, like, you know, like, approach it in a certain way so that he feels comfortable, or does it just come naturally?
Yes, consciously. I didn't want to go in just asking invasive questions right away, like, tell me your whole life story, all this stuff. Like, I mostly came in a store and would hang out and meet the people around because everyone just hangs out there, kind of sits around and talks. And so I would kind of do that too. And I wanted to become friends with him almost like more indirectly. Obviously, he knew I was doing this, but I wanted him to feel like I actually had a true interest in him and I wasn't just using him to make some art out of it. And that even goes beyond the film. Like, even now, I still visit him when I can and talk to him. And I still went to the Qigong classes he would host, even if I wasn't filming that day. And I really wanted him to know that I cared about his well-being and just who he is as a person.
Yeah. Well, that's so amazing. I love to think about that relationship that you cultivated. I can't wait to see that. Now we're going to listen to some more music. And just have some chill out time. So this is going to be Encore et Encore by Lily Thibodeau. It's like again and again. 'Cause
amazing.
Yeah, I love her. She's a very good French Canadian.